Welcome to the show. Josh Ricardo here, Broken Tail Dog Podcast with me, the one and only. How are you? I hope you're well. I have a really special episode for our first one of 2017. I hope your new year was great. Mine was okay. It was good. It's always good to be breathing, I guess. I actually did something stupid. I was flying back from my holiday, and I was delayed. And I'm, for some of you that might listen to the show and know this, I am extremely, irritable. And the flight was delayed, and I had some shit to do at home. So I got consumed with my tasks that awaited me, that I was pushed back 2 hours from. And I left my personal item, the one you put underneath the seat in front of you, I left it on the plane. And inside of it was pretty much everything. Everything I used to record the show, everything for work stuff that I do. And I didn't realize I left it until, right when I pulled up in the Uber in front of my apartment. And it was one of those feelings where you feel like it's over. Like you understand that it's just material things, but the sheer replacement of each thing and the amount of content on each item, like, you know, video and whatnot, and, you know, also the show, you're like, fucking you. And then you feel stupid. So it's insult upon insult upon insult to injury. And I had to get out of the Uber, get another Uber, go back to JFK, where I was coming from, which is about a 35-minute ride. The whole way, just on the phone, blowing up the airline that I was on. They basically couldn't do anything for me. I said, best bet is just to hurry up and get back to the airport and see if they took it off the plane. So, get to the baggage claim area, the little area they have there where you got to tell them you lost shit. And there's just a bunch of people there, like, not speaking English. Not the workers necessarily, but travelers who have broken bags. Like, and one guy had a broken strap, and I get that's a thing, dude, but I really wanted to kick him in the side of the head and be like, can you please move aside? I have many, 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 many hours of Broken Tail Dog I have to retrieve. So, finally talked to someone. They called the gate. They had my bag. Honestly, I felt like I almost hugged this strange man, because even though he didn't do anything, but the fact that he was the one that delivered the good news, I wanted to hug him like he cured my cancer. But that's the highlight. That being said, I digress. I think I used that properly. The first show of 2017 it's something really not only special, because I say that about a lot of shows, but I feel like we do it up right. I have on Emily Claypool. Emily is a sister of a previous guest, Kat Campbell. I met her. First time I talked to her, I knew I had to have her on. Not only because she's funny and she has a background in not only acting, but she's also an improviser, and I knew we'd have that in common. But also, she was not scared to talk about her past experiences with sexual assault. She's been assaulted twice, and she was really brave to come on. And for a piece of this interview, she talked about it in depth, not only what happened, but also the stuff that people go through when it's all said and done, which I found not only really brave and enlightening, but also educational. Because as a man, you don't always, especially if you don't consider yourself to be someone who would assault anyone, you forget that from the outside looking in, men are dangerous. I mean, just from us, you know, it's dangerous, the danger of it. And we talk about that briefly. I don't know about briefly. Maybe we go deeper into it, but we do talk about that for a moment, about how, you know, she walks into a room and she has to assess whether or not, where's the exits, where's, you know, it's crazy to take somebody's humanity like that. But she was really, I couldn't ask for a more honest, and, you know, she held no punches. It was a really positive experience. And I think a lot of young women who listen to the show and people in general are going to get a lot out of what she has to say. So sorry for the long intro this time around, but I wanted to make sure I gave it its proper due. So here's Emily.
Amazing. Amazing times. Oh, my God. It's crazy.
Isn't it?
The broken-tailed dog. So to give a little context on my show today and who I have on before I introduce them, because it's very exciting. If you guys recall back, I don't know, three episodes ago, I had a young model named Kat Campbell. And through Kat, I got to know her sister a little bit. And her sister's a UCB performer, improv performer, singer, and just all around young, cool millennial. So I thought, why not, for the first show of the year, have her on? So without any further ado, Emily Claypool, say hello to the Broken Tail Dog podcast.
Hello, peeps. Everyone.
Thanks for coming in. I know it's very hard to come in here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm great. You're great. We're all great.
Everybody's great.
So I think I was trying to figure out what would be the best way to start this thing, because I have a lot of big things to talk to you about, but you don't want to just blow your load right off the bat. You want to foreplay into it, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that's probably the best term. Lube your way into the big things.
Let's lube it up.
So start little. You're, what are you, a sophomore in college?
I'm a senior in college.
Damn, I thought you were younger than that. No, I mean, that's a compliment, right? You look young. I thought you were younger. Maybe it's your maturity level. I don't know what it is, but I thought you were younger. So you're a senior in college. Mm-hmm. And when did you get into improv?
I got into improv primarily because I've always been an actor. I did a lot of musical theater in high school and stuff like that. And I did a lot of dramas. I've always been super into doing dramas, very serious, lots of crying, lots of, you know, my husband died or so on and so forth. So I decided that I needed to kind of make a change a little bit and kind of make a dent in my comedic side because, you know, ever since I was a little kid, I was like stealing my sister's jokes and telling them to the whole room and all that. So I always felt like I needed to exercise that. And I think that improv definitely has been something that has helped me in the last, I guess, 3 years now.
So you started out as wanting to be a dramatic actress.
Yeah.
And then you, what was it that said, well, maybe I'm probably more prone to comedy. I mean, it sounds like you were like, I need a break or something, or I need some variance, I need something different.
Yeah.
But that's what you do now, predominantly, right? I mean, are you still doing dramatic acting? I'm not saying, I mean, you're young, so obviously you're not pigeonholing yourself into one thing, but you do a lot of comedy now, right?
Yeah, I do a lot of comedy. I direct a lot of sketch comedy. I am not so much a writer, but I do, you know, I act in sketch comedy and things like that. And it really has shown me a different side of myself as an actor, and also just, you know, in going out into the real world and wanting to, you know, act in comedy, improv is such a huge outlet to be able to do that. I mean, even just the confidence of going into a room and not knowing what's going to happen and feeling okay with that is something that takes a while, especially, you know, for someone who's young like me, you know, having that kind of confidence, is not something that happens overnight.
Sure. I mean, because I'm higher, like I'm with a bunch of improv theater companies that pay me to do improv, which is amazing. It's just such a different ballgame than stand-up, because predominantly I tour for stand-up, and I've always been a stand-up, and stand-up's a lonely, dark, amazing, mean. It's a mean craft. Stand-up's mean. If it's not mean, then it's probably not that good. This is my expert opinion on stand-up. I've been doing it a long time. If it's not kind of mean or self-deprecating, probably not that fun. It's not that fun to watch. I don't want to watch it if you're not going to be witty and also be mean. Improv is very supportive. It's very different. I mean, improv, it was hard to adjust to improv for me because I thought, you know, I really want to be mean. And it's not – a lot of people do improv are people that are not only well-educated. This is – I'm not necessarily generalizing everybody, but my experience in being tons of troops and being in tons of things with improv people – it's so supportive that you can be fun and nice. That's an adjustment.
It really is.
And you're a mean person. Like deep down, you probably have like a dirt bag core to you, which is maybe why I feel a connection. Is it being a dramatic actress and having access to tons of emotions, and then you go you go to do improv? I mean, do you do long form? Is that like the standard sketch you guys are doing, or stuff you're doing on stage?
We primarily do long form. You know, in my troupe at school, and like you said, a lot of people who do improv are really highly educated because it's very much a college thing. You always start improv in college, and we kind of over the last few years have taught ourselves essentially, like from the UCB manual, and then we ended up performing at the Del Close Marathon at the
Pit.
Which
is great. Yeah, Del Close is great. It's a great
and
marathon.
All of those like really really fun things. And yeah, you're right. Like improv is so supportive because I am a little mean sometimes.
You're mean.
I would say that I have an attitude on me, which is like the girly way to say mean.
She's very understated right now. Just keep going. Sorry to interrupt. By all means.
It's for the listeners. It's really for the listeners.
Sure. Pandering to them.
Wait, well, when we turn the mic off, you'll see.
No, I've seen. Don't worry about that. Mic's on or off. I'm aware.
but I think that supportive environment kind of, it makes you walk into a room and think and already have faith that people will be supportive of you. And that,
and also the study is of that. I mean, it's funny because I'll watch TV. I watch tons of TV because it's my job, but also that's my what I do. It's my one hobby I have.
Who doesn't? Yeah.
So I don't watch TV like a normal person. I break it down how it's shot, how it's written, and what's going on. And there's a lot of shows now that do this thing because there's so many. Ever since The Office came out, when Ricky Gervais did The Office, that one camera kind of talking to the camera, breaking the fourth wall, where you kind of write, like especially with Larry David, you know, he would curb. He gets these great improvisers in the mix, and he says, okay, here's where we have to end up in this storyline, so just do your thing to get there. And they're great, but not everybody's great. And with improv, the supportive part is the fact that if Emily and I are improvising, and she says she's a tree, my job is to yes and her.
Oh, yeah.
And when I watch fucking dirtbag, shithead, fuckwad, terrible improvisers who are taking jobs away from good improvisers on your bullshit television show, not yes and your partner, I want to crawl through the TV and throw you out of the fucking window.
No, it's really true. I mean, that's like day one shit. That is the day one
shit.
And
I see a lot of people not doing it because Here's my beef.
Well, they're every man for themselves, kind of.
And this is the problem, and I'm going to call out your generation, even though I'm technically on the tail end of that generation.
Yeah, you are.
It's a lot of mediocrity being celebrated, right? It's a lot of like, what do you mean? What do you mean? I have all the, I can't have that. Why can't I have that? I'm the best. It's the trophy era for doing dick, right? So a lot of people you watch, like I watch a lot of like young improvisers, like, and then I did this. And it could be a man or a woman I'm imitating. I don't know. It's just in my mind. That's how they sound. And then I'm doing this. And it's amazing. And the unbridled confidence with no resume is unreal.
Yeah.
Unfucking real.
Well, and it's also the me, 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 me. A
lot of
me. Yeah. I mean, improv is not about you. It's about, honestly, the best improvisers are the people who set up their partner for a good laugh. Like, the people who swipe the scene at the right time, not the people who are, you know, just going out there and yelling jokes until they get the reaction that they want.
And that's what the one thing I did love about improv, because I play football in college. I think football is the greatest team sport. Even if you don't like sports, if you were to try to break down the foundation of what it is to be in that environment, it's very much very supportive. It's very much working with each other. And if one person doesn't do their own job, it fucks up the whole thing. Yeah. And that's what I really loved about improv. It really does teach you that as a performer.
Oh, absolutely.
At the same time, stand-up is, to me, the greatest art form, just because it's extremely difficult and you're alone. And the thing is, to put it in perspective for all of you at home, and I know a lot of you listen to this show every week, so you may have heard this analogy before, but I think I might put it in a different way than I ever have. You got an acoustic singer. I fancy myself being musically inclined to a certain degree. I don't play necessarily an instrument, but I have taken singing lessons. I have a decent voice. I can play harmonica. Like, I'm not saying I'm an expert. I'm just saying I'm not a rube walking in there. If the guy's playing the notes properly and he has a decent voice, then he's all right. All right, good for him or her. With stand-up, you could be unbelievable at it.
Yeah.
And people will, I don't get it. I don't get it. And then you're bad.
Well, there are a lot of people who rely really heavily on the writing, you know?
Sure.
And you could be a fantastic writer and your delivery terrible is crap. Performer. Yeah. And then it just gets lost. I mean, you don't wait that extra beat and the joke dies.
It's a lot of timing. And I think even in a more general way, even if you are a decent performer, the elements become a thing with mm-hmm. stand-up where you're sitting there or standing there, whatever you do. And if the lights aren't right, if the room's hot, if the mic goes in and out, you're fucked. I mean, that could really affect you tremendously. My point I'm trying to make is that's why I think stand-up's the hardest, is you don't have anyone that has your back. It's just you. And it's subjective to where if, like, you're in front of 20 dumb people and your jokes are great and you're a great performer, but you got to do some problem solving within the joke.
Yeah.
It's a wrap. And with improv, you could have one of you will hit, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, because that's the whole point. You have a team of people. One person's this, one person's that. And then you come together and you gel if you're a good team.
Even just the fact that you're doing it, you know, on the spot, the audience mm-hmm. feels like they're in on the joke already.
Sure, sure.
So they're already laughing. I mean, I completely agree. I think stand-up is incredibly difficult. I've done it maybe twice. I don't think that it's – I mean, it's hard, yes, but I also just don't think that it's for me because I definitely – like you were asking, like, what spurred me to get into improv? And I thought about just my general experience as an actor and doing very, like, classic musical theater and mm-hmm. that sort of, like, three-beat, like,
yeah.
very cheesy, very, like, strategic kind of comedy. And it's so interesting how that, like, fits back into, you know, what people find funny in improv, those patterns of jokes, you know, that's always what you're going to find. And especially when you're playing off of people, I can't, you know, as an actor, I'm so dependent. You know, I was taught look towards your scene partner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're doing stand up, the audience is your scene partner,
yeah.
and they are so goddamn unforgiving.
Yeah, yeah.
I just don't think that I could do it.
So the mean girl can't handle mean people.
I can clap back.
I think it's the first time anyone on I've had a lot of 20, 19-year-old, 22-year-old girls on the show, and I don't think anyone ever said clap back. So that is a
really?
Broken tail dog first, everybody. Let's,
oh my gosh.
Let's lay it out there. That's for real. So, okay, so the next thing I want to talk to you about, now that we're on the topic of being a young female performer. Females are the funniest people on Saturday Night Live right now. There are tons of female comedians that are out there doing their thing that are extremely successful.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like comedy specifically is very female-friendly more than other aspects of the entertainment industry because they really are promoting females and as well as they should, and they should keep doing that, and I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
So as a young woman, and you're an attractive girl, and you have a social media, I'm looking at your Instagram right now, and you have a modest amount of followers. You don't, like, blow it up. Do you think, because there's a lot of girls out there doing that are pretty like you, that show the goods and then try to, like, and then get in their performance part of it, build up the following, and then use that to catapult them into someplace. Now, I'm taking a long way around to get to the point of this, but for me, the social media in conjunction with the art, there's something impure about that. Sorry, that's my phone. I'm unprofessional. impure from the sense that they don't always go hand in hand. I'm very well studied, as are you. This is why I think this question aligns with what you're going through. I create stories and I'm a storyteller, and I don't necessarily have any desire for my fans or my fan base to see me walk my dog or see me go to the bathroom or talk about my day, because that's not what I do.
Yeah.
Let me give you these stories and I'll show you, like, what I'm doing, and you like or you don't like, or you go and you watch the movie, or you go and you check out the web series. I mean, you have, in this day and age, there's a value to, more so than me. I mean, mm-hmm. even if I was ripped and I had, like, a six pack, I could probably get some followers if
but
I was.
It's not the same.
If you are, like, showing the goods off a little bit, sexying it up,
And then you go, hey, come check out my improv show.
Yeah.
But I feel like you're kind of similar to me where your training and the purity of the art, and I'm not being high and mighty. I'm not trying to be pretentious or a douchebag. I mean, this is social media is a necessity and there's no way to get around. You have to do it.
Oh, absolutely.
So my question is, have you thought about that? Have you thought about really, I mean, you use Snapchat a ton. I mean, I know you're really active on social media, mm-hmm. but probably not more active than your average college student at the moment.
No, definitely not.
But for your career, do you want to try to align those two? Do you see that being an option for you, or do you say fuck it?
I do. I think that the whole narrating your life can build your following even further after you already have a following, sort mm-hmm. of like the Kylie Jenner phenomenon on Snapchat, sure. which is, you know, people want to see her life. They want to see, you know, that lifestyle up close, you know, even closer than they can get it on reality TV.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't find that super necessary. I think that if I am doing something exciting, I really try to use social media to pump it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, I don't try to value myself as, you know, far as my physical assets, because I do. I am someone who really is, like, committed to my art. And I think that, you know, being an actor, being a performer, being an improviser in any sort of way, mm-hmm. Desexualizing yourself, particularly over social media, makes people take you more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my goal. My goal is not to be...
So what's your demographic then?
Well, I mean,
because we all have to go after, we all have to figure out what our brand is. I really hate that word, by the way. It's a very Gary Vee. Hey, by the way, Gary Vee, go fuck yourself, all right? Stop telling everybody, like, you're pandering to your market. Your market happens to be young millennials. So, of course, you're like, how dare you tell these kids they don't have social life? It's the truth, Gary. A lot of people don't have very good social skills. And you know why? Because we're paying a lot more attention to the screens. But you get paid off the screens, you fucking prick. Anyways, so moving right along, we all need to brand ourselves into a certain place, right? Like, yeah. I understand that I need to streamline. I have so many projects. I do a lot of shit, and it's all over the place. And I figured out fairly recently how to make those things, those rivers, flow into one ocean. Exactly. So with you... I don't know if you even need to know this at the moment because you're still, I think, fleshing out what your art will be. I mean, you're still in college, you know, so you're not like in New York Absolutely. City right now being Absolutely. Able to bang it out as often as you probably want to. But do you have an idea of what your demographic's going to be?
I think as far as, you know, when we talk demographic, I mean, obviously you have to consider that the large amount of my, like you said, you know, I have a modest amount of followers. The large amount of that small group are people my age, people who want to see someone their age doing something that is exciting or, you know, gives them hope that they can do something exciting at their own age, you mm-hmm. know? So I definitely feel like that's something that I can tap into using social media. But at the same time, like I said before, I don't want to sensationalize myself.
Sure.
I want to bring attention to myself for the things that I'm doing, you know, the work that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I think obviously, you know, it comes hand in hand with social media, but, and I respect people who really find their following there,
mm-hmm.
but then at the end of the day, they become so-and-so and then their subheader is social media icon or, mm-hmm. You know, like Instagram famous or whatever.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
it, then they're like, oh, well that person's just trying to be a singer. Like that's just their extra thing. You know,
yeah,
it's like
yeah.
a Disney star trying to make a pop album, you know?
And it's, you know, I want to be really clear with everyone cause I am irritated today. So forgive me. But I'm not bagging on necessarily what people are doing with their social media. People are making a lot of money. I got a show that's heavily involved with YouTube. I've been to the YouTube headquarters 4 or 5 times the last year, meeting with people there. There is money to be made, and young people, every big company is attacking the young market because they want the clicks, and young people are on their phones. So I understand that this is the way it is. I'm a part of the same hypocrisy that I'm preaching against. I get it.
It's just about what kind of art you want to make.
Sure.
You know?
And and you could be creative on social media and do absolutely. It in a way that's completely absolutely. Relevant and witty and beautiful and utilize it for whatever it is. But I feel like the majority don't. They're doing what you're saying they're doing, where it's like, let me get all these followers for this and then I'll parlay that into what I really want to be doing.
Right. Exactly.
With very little training. And then the problem is that the big companies, these different entertainment
avenues and advertisement. They go, oh, you got a million followers and you don't really know, you're not really great at what you do, but you got a million followers. Let me put you
that
in this movie.
All your shit.
Let me,
yeah.
And you know, I get it. Like, that's the way it works. And I'm not necessarily bitching. I'm just saying, like, can we have some taste? Can we, like, hold some people, have some accountability for what we're fucking doing? For example, Emily has a picture of herself on Halloween. She has one picture on her whole Instagram. You'll go follow her and you'll see this. It's her as Ariel. And she's not like, it's not crazy. She just happens to be a well-endowed woman. So she has 130 likes on this picture. And her other pictures average about 70 to 80 likes. So there is something to be said. And a lot of your followers probably are your are friends and people that know you and people that follow those people that have the same kind of attitude towards things. So you probably have some like-minded people that follow you. So I'm sure if they were just strangers, it would be up around 2,000. But that's the way it goes.
Yeah. And I also think that, you know, keeping my social media kind of a little bit more modest is more it's also kind of a protection for myself, against harassment and things like that. My sister, like, I love what she does through social media. She's a model, and I think that that's exactly what she needs. She needs to post photos on Instagram.
Yeah, it's a different
modeling. She's a totally different brand of person when we're talking about social media. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I really respect that, but then it also comes at a cost, you mm-hmm. know? And being a young woman, it's hard enough to avoid being harassed, you know, on the street,
sure.
let alone, you know, in your own home when you're scrolling through your Instagram or your Twitter or whatever.
Yeah.
And I
that's
also
a big topic on the show, because I have a lot of females on it's, I mean, the show focuses on females in the entertainment industry. It says that in the goddamn tagline. But I talk to a lot of females. I mean, it's a give and take, and I don't know how they deal with it. We've talked with tons of people, and if you listen to the show, you know, that have huge, huge, huge followings based off their sexuality and based off the way they look. And they're very aware of it. And many of the women that I've had on the show are very savvy, very good at what they do, very strong-willed. And they get constant, constant dick pics and this and what do you – let me see your feet. And if that's part of your world and you go, oh, okay, well, you know,
it comes with the territory.
You know, I'm kind of inviting that. Kind of thing. I mean, as much as I'm irritated about it, I'm kind of inviting it. I mean, I am half naked, so it doesn't give them the right to do that, but it's gonna get done, you know?
Well, I mean, I, in the sense of the male gaze, yes, a man would say this woman is inviting this. However,
No, I meant on social media specifically.
Right, I
love women. So if I look at a woman, I'm doing my best to be respectful, but I'm also understanding the fact that it's an attractive female that I think is attractive. And I want to look at her. I don't want to make her fucking want to run home and put clothes on, but I want to let her know that I'm admiring her, and then I want to move on with my day. And that's okay to me. I mean,
I
it's
think that
part
that
of nature.
Is a respectful way to do that. And I think even just throwing a like at the picture is saying something, you know? It's already saying, you know, this is interesting to me. This is great to me. But then, you know, there are those guys that go really far.
I really want to just send a picture of my erect penis and write on it, look what you did. Thank you. And that's polite. Just be polite.
I've gotten politely catcalled before. I won't even say that. I won't even say that I haven't. You know, there are guys who will try to be polite about street harassment.
I know you're an ultra feminist, and that's fine. But I come from a male perspective, and I also talk to women all day. So I feel like I also have some background in trying to be sensitive at the same time being able to be me without having to feel bad about being attracted to a woman and wanting to tell her that. I think there are ways to do that are extremely charming and welcomed, and there are ways to do it that are completely uncalled for. I enjoy having a conversation and flirting with women. I love women. I think women are great. I'm raised by all women, and I get that it's a world where it's like men are creepy. Women are not nice sometimes, and then you have transsexuals, and some of them have been nice to me. I've talked to everybody, all right? Trans, lesbian, gay, mm-hmm. pansexuals, pronouns, hims, he's, they's, why's, where's, all of them. A man of the people, Emily Claypool.
I'm glad. I'm glad to hear it. I know a lot of like non-binary people. A lot of people
non-binary. I love that.
Who go by gender neutral or gender fluid.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's something that going to a liberal arts school, I've learned definitely a lot about.
Right. Yes.
And the respect for people's choices, I think, is really important, especially with, you know, if we're talking about men, you know, admiring, you know, the
you push a lot of men around
or another.
You have to, right? I mean, because you're young and you're attractive and you're young. You're not like young 25, 27. You're young like in your early 20s.
I'm 21.
Early 20s, like I said. You must push men around. And you must attract men that are probably like, kind of like it. Subconsciously. They kind of like not having to do stuff. Or taking control.
I'm a very dominant personality. And
does that get old?
Huh?
Does that get old?
No, I don't think so. Only, I mean, it's something that I have not always been. You know, growing up with my sister, growing up with my mother, who are very, very dominant personalities. My mm-hmm. father, also very dominant personality. I always was kind of, I sort of left myself in the background. I didn't really speak my mind a lot. And then when I started, you know, high school, and then mm-hmm. I kind of started finding my way and finding my individuality. And then by the time I got to college, I realized, like, I was like, oh my God, like, I need to just like let it out, sure. you know? And now I feel like I'm sort of fulfilling that like dominant personality that I always had to stifle when I was younger. So I don't think.
So really you're saying you stifled your voice growing up?
Oh, absolutely.
And now you're saying that you know what your voice is. Do you think you go overboard because now you're overcompensating for the fact that you didn't speak? Because I know I've done that. I mean, I've been through a lot of shit. So I know in the past I've overcompensated. In fact, probably fairly recently. There's probably at times I have to check myself because I know, like, this isn't necessarily.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The situation, the way I'm responding to it. Weird. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that I've. I'm still finding my voice.
Yeah, of course. I'm
you know,
21.
I mean,
as
not only as like a performer, as a mm-hmm. singer, as an actor, as an improviser, you know, what are all the things that I do. But just as a person, like I'm kind of figuring out who I am, kind of what my, especially like me, I'm super into clothes and makeup and stuff like that, you know, in my style and everything. And that's
into Barbie dolls? Do you play with Barbie dolls still, or are you too old for Barbie dolls? No, keep going. I'm sorry. You understand what your likes are and what you want to invest in and what your voice could be, but you're still rounding that out. You're still polishing it.
It takes a while. I mean, especially as someone who is hopefully preparing to, you know, be in the spotlight at some point.
Yeah.
Particularly as an actor, you know, I love doing film. I love doing stuff on camera. So that's something that I am already considering mm-hmm. and saying, okay, I need to figure out who I am before I can sort of omit this, not only to myself and the people around me, but to a larger group of people.
This is something that you and I discussed before, you know, I was going to have you on, and you said, you know, I said, is it okay if we talk about this? And you said, yes, because I think it's a really, there's a lot of females that listen to this show, and I think this is completely relevant, especially to what we're talking about now. Hmm. The way you are, and you developing your voice, and you being stifled, you have had to deal with sexual assault before and how to live with that, right? I mean, do you think that is part of not only sits with you in a very shitty way? I'm not in your shoes. I could never know what it's like. Mm-hmm. But when you go through something that traumatic and that awful, and I don't even know how long ago it was. I mean, you're so young. How do you gauge? Like we were talking about a couple minutes ago, how do you gauge, like, is this me lashing out because I'm so angry? Is this me? Is this actually me? Like, that must be really hard. Those moments must be really grainy sometimes.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was assaulted twice. Once by two different men. Once when I was a freshman in college and once when I was a sophomore, actually. So I've had some time, you know, to process. It is really hard, but it sort of came, both assaults came at a time where I was really thriving and finding my voice and really feeling like I was accomplishing things. You know, I the second time that it happened, I had just been cast in my first main stage show at my school. I was staying over spring break to rehearse the show, and I felt really confident, and I felt like I was doing good work, and I was, you know, taking steps and everything. I was in a relationship, and it's, you know, getting assaulted is really the ultimate, you know, stifling of your voice.
Your humanity, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, both times,
especially. That set you back? Did you find yourself regressing a little bit? You were on this great path, and then.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
And how far apart were the assaults?
The winter of my freshman year and the spring. So during spring break of my sophomore year. So just like.
So a year.
About like a year apart. I was.
That must be brutal to have to go. Not only go through that, but say to yourself, like, do you have those moments? You go, was it my fault? Did you have that for a second?
My first reaction. That was my first reaction.
Did I do something?
Both times I was in a relationship, and my immediate reaction was, this is all my fault. Mm-hmm. I cheated on you. This is all my fault. And
how'd you get over that? If you are.
The first time I was in a very unsupportive relationship, and he blamed me, and sure. He continually blamed me until the very end of our relationship, and said that I was lying because I wanted to save our relationship and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, those are the kinds of people who really invalidate, you know, assault survivors. And mm-hmm. it's really hard.
It's what sucks about it is that in the moment you're going through this awful thing, and this is someone that you've chosen, and you've chosen them to be with you. And it's hard to go, I made a bad choice in you. You're terrible. You're a fucking idiot. Like, I made a terrible choice in picking you, because that doesn't hit you. You think they must be saying something, right? Because I've chosen them. And then you have to go through figuring out, like, is this person even worth my fucking time? They're not, obviously. They're awful. Yeah. But that doesn't make you feel any better.
No,
so now
it's
doubling down on the bullshit.
Especially
for you.
Because, like, the easiest reaction is to say, this is my fault. This is, you know, something that can happen, you know? Oh, people cheat on each other all the time, you know, rather than saying, you know, I was assaulted. Your first reaction is, how can I rationalize this, you know? And then coming to someone and going through all of that and saying sorry and having all of these crazy emotions, and then days and days later just sitting and thinking about it over and over again, and then saying, this, I'm so sorry, but this isn't my fault. Like, and it takes time to process, and then being told, how could you
it's this
lie to
person.
Me, blah, 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 blah.
And that's the thing I'm trying to make. That's the point I'm trying to make to the people listening, is that this is shitty because it's not even about you anymore when it should be. You shouldn't have to deal with your relationship. You should be dealing with healing and trying to figure out the proper channels to try to get you back to a whole person again, because you've been taken from.
What he said, how could you do this to me?
Yeah, he made it about him, and these are the kind of people that in the moment you don't realize, like, you don't take any – what's the word I'm looking for? You don't take any comfort in the fact that it's about them and I can leave you alone because you're the worst. You're the worst person ever. So you just totally – I'm just totally negating you as a human being. You don't even exist anymore.
I mean, yeah, we ended up breaking up.
Of course.
I'm so happy to say that the next year, the next time that it happened with a different guy, because thankfully the first guy actually dropped out of school. Mm-hmm. So I go to a school that's like 2,000 people.
Small, right?
Very, very small. Yeah. Very small campus. And when I was assaulted for the second time, he was actually in the show with me. He was a theater major. He, you know, I saw him all the time. He was around everywhere. And my boyfriend at the time, who was still my boyfriend now, we just celebrated our 2-year anniversary. Mm-hmm. He was so supportive and has continued to be supportive, but not in a way where he says, I'm trying to protect you. Sure. I'm trying to shield you. He's empowering me. And that's what you should look for in your support system. You should look for people who want to empower you to take control of your own life rather than try to take control of your life for you because they're taking your pain on them. They're trying to take it away by putting it on themselves, which is bad for them. It's bad for you. It's just, it's so important to have a good support system, because you do feel really alone.
Where do you feel the most effects from that now? I mean, I know you and I had a conversation the other night where I know it was kind of like a passing comment. It was kind of tongue-in-cheek, but I think it was probably serious. Where you walk in, this part was actually serious. You walk in a room and you go, how do I get out of this room if someone tries to assault me?
Yeah.
Mostly referring to the men in the room. If someone here tries to do something to me, how can I get away? I know that's one thing that probably sits with you that stems from the assault. I'm not sure how many women do that on that serious of a level, because maybe they've never been through that. So they it might be in the back of their mind, but they're not literally going into a room going, fuck, well, this shit goes down. Yeah, where the fuck am I going to go? What other things like that, that you have to deal with every day mentally, that you have to figure out how to talk yourself through? And
I think the thing that troubles me the most, and still kind of sits with me, is that these were people that I know. You know,
yeah, it's not some boogeyman in an alley. It's someone you've worked with.
And also, you know, I didn't come out with bruises. You know, he didn't tie me down or choke me or tell me he'd kill me if I told any. You know, it's not the kind of shit that you see on Law and Order. Mm. It's saying, I don't want to do this. I don't think that this is a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that this is a good idea. I don't want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the thing that haunts me every single day is not screaming, not mm-hmm. fighting back. And honestly, like, that happens to so many women. You feel paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
You feel absolutely paralyzed. Like, you can't. And then there's this whole cloud of, like, stigma about how you don't want, even though, like, you don't want this to happen, you don't want to hurt his feelings. Like, because this is a person that you know. You know, this
That's
is someone
so,
who you work
I
with.
I never you, would you, know that. That, you, that actually came into your brain. He's taking something from you, but there's still a compassionate part of you during the moment.
Yeah, because you don't want, like, you're trying to figure, like, what's the smoothest way out of this? Because this is a person who, yeah, like, I told my boyfriend this, and this is something that also haunts me, is that, you know, the second guy that assaulted me, which was a whole just terror. It was horrible. He and I started making out, and I was okay with that. You mm-hmm. know, I consented to that. And then when things started to get bad, when I started to say, I don't like this, I don't like this,
mm-hmm.
I kept saying to myself, why did I say yes to that?
Mm-hmm.
But a woman, I mean, any person, not even just a woman, has the right to revoke consent at any time. And I say, like, it haunts me every single day. Why did I say yes to that? Why did I say okay? Why did I even let him
mm-hmm.
into my world like that? You know, why did I give him that power
sure.
over me?
Mm-hmm.
So
you're really, you're mad at yourself for not standing up for yourself in the moment.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's what really stings.
Yeah, the thing that's
every
most
day
is
it,
saying,
it comes up probably
didn't
every day.
Why didn't I just say no, mm-hmm. no, instead of saying, I don't like this, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do this, you know,
yeah,
which
yeah.
is enough to revoke consent. But still, you know, when you go in front of a panel of people who say, well, did you scream? Well, did you fight back? Well, you
it's
don't
so
have any
ridiculous.
Bruises on you.
But we're talking about you because you're the one that has to live with you forever, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's the stuff that sits and stings. I mean, at the end of the day, the people in the room that need to convict somebody in that situation, that's a whole separate thing. You have to live with you, and it's hard to probably live with the fact that, you know, I gotta let it go. I didn't do, I did what I had to do. I said I wasn't into it. I said I don't want it to go any further. You know, like, what more could I have done? Maybe I could have yelled, but then what? You don't know what would happen, and that's torturous thought process.
Yeah,
it's torturous.
In, you know, the last, you know, couple, like, 6 months maybe, I've started to kind of, like, let
yourself off the hook, right?
Yeah.
Forgive yourself.
Yeah, I mean, because every woman blames herself in some capacity or mm-hmm. another. Anybody who is assaulted, rather, anybody of any gender, because it's very possible for that to happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to do it, and it's hard to say this is not my fault. And there are some days where I do blame myself, and it's, you know, it's hard
mm-hmm.
for me to have sex, to be a normal person,
yeah.
you know, to feel okay. You know, in those kinds of situations. And then, once I started letting myself off the hook, it felt a lot better because there's really only one person to blame and it's not me.
Not you at all. That's really brave.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's great.
It takes a lot of time.
That's really heavy, but you're really brave to be able to talk about it. And I think that's really helpful to anyone that's going through that. And there's probably, I feel like it's something that you see in the news and through social media a lot more now about sexual assault that you never really saw before. And it's something that needs to be talked about.
Well, and my mom said to me yesterday, she said, how do they keep letting this happen? She said, how come this is happening to everybody right now? And I was like, it's always been happening. It's We're just talking about it.
There's finally a platform where people can talk about it.
Yeah,
every day, all the time, constantly.
And, like I said before, not having a voice, when I was younger and talking about the way that I feel. Mm-hmm. And I said this to you the other day. Now I'm comfortable oversharing.
And that must sting even more because of your past. I mean, you were saying that you had a huge chip on the fact that you didn't fucking speak up as a kid. You felt like you fell into the background. And then you're finally starting to do something, and then now you're even more angry at yourself for the fact you didn't scream and yell and do this. And it's, at the end of the day, it's not your fault. You said you didn't want to do it. It's over. That's one person's fault. You did your thing.
Right, exactly. And it just empowers me more now to talk about it, because that's the only way. For me personally, I mean, everybody processes trauma differently, but it's really the only way for me personally to heal from that is to talk about it and to let people know that it's okay, and not for people to say, I'm sorry that happened to you. You know, like, don't work with him then. Don't work with him. Don't be friends with him. Don't buy weed from him.
Like, sure. You got to hold yourself accountable for saying no, but don't think it's your fault. It's not your fault. If you say no, you say no. It's over. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're awesome, ma'am.
Thank you.
That's a great, heavy, fucking deep moment. It's really hard for me to be serious because I come from a traumatic background, so the only way I know how to deal with things is to be pretty ridiculous about it. But that was really nutritional, and I'm glad you came on and you talked about it.
Me too.
Aren't you?
I'm very glad.
How great is the show? How great am I?
You're
just tell people.
Fantastic.
And handsome. Tell him handsome.
Oh, now you just want
come on,
me to...
Come on, now it's the show. Come here, the mic's
right.
Now
I got the spotlight on me. I got pressure. Go ahead. Josh is incredibly handsome.
Thank you.
She
totally means it.
Like 10 o'clock shadow is really vibing right now.
All right, stop, because you're going to ruin it. I'm going to take
Jordans,
a compliment. It's everything.
The whole vibe.
See how
Watch
mean
out,
she is?
Ladies.
Yeah, see how mean? She got mean. That's when she gets mean. It's like a annoying kind of like... backhanded mean too, which is like the worst kind of mean.
To me, it's the best kind of mean.
Well, sure, you really do love yourself.
Most
go ahead, plug your shit. Where can people go see your stuff and check you out?
Right now, I'm working on a web series. It's called Metamorphosis. The pilot episode will be coming out on YouTube in January. Look for that. I'll be posting about it on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is This Is Emily. Okay.
That's not difficult.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Way to brand. Gary Vee, call her. You fuck.
My Instagram handle is Play-Doh Pool. So PlayDoHPoole. Because Claypool ends with an E.
So everybody go to Claypool. Play-Doh Pool. Go to Emily's Instagram, and it's 7 weeks ago is the post we referred to, Little Mermaid post. Give it a like. Give the Little Mermaid post a like. Say old Josh sent you.
For the least.
Say Josh sent you from the Broken Tail Dad. I want to thank my guest, Emily Claypool. Thank you, my dear. An amazing job. Are an excellent guest. Thank you for coming on and sharing your stories. I know that couldn't have been easy, but you're doing the greater good, and you're fighting that good fight, and you're funny, and you have a great mermaid post, so we've learned a lot about you. Everyone go follow Emily on the Instagrams and the Twitter. She has some really funny stuff on her Twitter feed as well, and also Instagram. She has some great pics, so make sure you go there, support her, whatever she's doing, and I want to thank her again if you're listening. Good job, old M. That being said,
thank you so much for supporting the show in 2016. We are now in 2017, and we got some big things going on. And we're starting off hot, not only with this episode, but a lot of great episodes to come. You can always follow the show, Broken Tailed Dog, with Josh Accardo, at Broken Tailed on Twitter, on Instagram, and you can email the show, brokentailed@gmail.com. All right, you can always follow me at Josh Accardo on everything else. And do me a favor, subscribe on iTunes, and do me a favor, you rate it, you know, give it a rating. I feel so neurotic today. Just like, oh, and then I went to the store, and I had to get I think it's because I only slept 3 hours. Problem sleeping. That's a problem. I'm having problems going to sleep. I'm fucking delirious, man. I can't take it anymore. Can't fucking take it. I love you guys. You guys are great people. You're wonderful. You have all the makings of greatness. And thank you for listening. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Take it easy.